and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev.
By the way, I should just say, it's absolutely chucking it down where I am at the moment.
Yeah, same here. I was a little bit worried that it might cause an audio issue, and God forbid we have one of those on our podcast.
But the sound of rain can be quite relaxing.
Yeah, you know, when you want it. Yeah, I agree. But not when it's unwelcome.
No, but this could be like a little sort of extra that we are suddenly providing on the podcast.
What, we're moving into ASMR podcasting?
Yes. Yeah, so if there's like the rain fall in the background, like next week, if it was a success, if the rain is being picked up by the microphones, I mean, I'm quite well huddled amongst all my soundproofing equipment, so it shouldn't be being picked up. But I'm just thinking that maybe that's something we could add next week, the Amazon rainforest. You know, the week after, it could be like whale calls.
Yeah, I'm sure that wouldn't get annoying at all.
The whole way through. Or maybe each segment of the podcast would have a different sort of, but then people just say, will you just shut up? I just want to hear the noise. And that would become a far more successful podcast, probably. If we just offered an hour of whale noise, I bet they would get more downloads than us talking bollocks.
Yeah, I quite like the idea.
Lucrative for us.
Yeah, I mean, it might sort of balance us out a little bit. The annoyance of listening to us sort of is sort of quelled by the sort of gentle rain noise or the whales or so. Yeah, I think that'd be great.
A friend of mine went to sleep listening to our podcast the other night, and he had that weird thing where I entered his dream.
Oh my God, like Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, it's like that weird thing that happened. I quite like that, you know, when you're in that sort of state of sleep and if you're listening to something and suddenly that becomes part of your dream. I quite like that. It's quite freaky, but I enjoy it.
It's a very strange thing. I remember having it once. I had an alarm clock set to just turn on the radio to wake me up, but I didn't wake up straight away, and it was on BBC Radio 2, and this is going back a few years. So it felt like I was in bed, like having this weird dream where I was sort of in bed having a chat with Terry Wogan. It was very disconcerting.
But were you sort of interacting with Wogan?
Yeah, it felt like he was talking directly to me, and he was like,
well,
in
no,
the dream
was
with
his
me.
Mastery of the medium.
That's because he's an old pro.
He's an old pro, yeah.
I'm not arrogant enough to go to bed listening to our own podcast,
well,
but
I do
listen to a lot of the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows.
Yes.
Which is very comforting because I'm very familiar with it all. But when you're just drifting off to sleep, Ricky Gervais has a laugh.
I know.
That will cut through pretty much anything. I'm sure he could shatter glass with that laugh. So well, that can wake you up.
I think I have exactly the same because I go to bed listening to Ricky Gervais a lot. And what I find is you have to turn it up to a degree. I don't want to get all technical on your ass. But I find the level of Carl Pilkington against Gervais and Merchant is lower.
Of course. So, it's like a tightrope act, because if you turn Ricky's laugh down to where it's a sort of
you
bearable
volume... You can't hear
volume,
Pilkington.
Pilkington's... you can't hear him at all.
You can't hear him. So you have to turn it up to hear Pilkington. And then when Gervais laughs in the middle of the fucking night, it's terrifying at times. You wake up, you're like, Jesus Christ, well, oh, it's Gervais laughing.
I think, by the way, this is really tragic. There are YouTube compilations you can find.
Oh, they've gone for hours.
And they're called, like, Go to Sleep with Ricky Gervais and Carl Pilkington and Steve Merchant. And it's basically a compilation of the show.
Yeah.
But I think someone has painstakingly gone to find bits where Ricky Gervais isn't laughing like a banshee.
Right.
So, I mean, that would take out most of the show, because he really enjoyed himself on those shows.
The only thing I'd worry about on that is they'd have to, well... edited, because that's going to keep me awake. A bad edit will keep me awake. So, you know, that because I can't stand that. If I hear a bad edit, then I will have to go back and listen to it again and think, oh, that's a terrible edit. I do it on the telly a lot. If I hear a bit of bad editing on a TV program or an odd edit, you know, whether they, like David Attenborough sometimes or on a documentary, where they sometimes had to pick up a bit of the recording of the narration, but it's been recorded either somewhere else or it's not quite the same sound and they pop it in. And I hear that and I think, oh, oh, that's, and I have to rewind it and just double check it.
A couple of losers, aren't we? Speaking of things that aren't or shouldn't be allowed, I mean, not just audio quality or editing, but specifically with some of the Ricky Gervais shows on XFM back in the sort of early 2000s, you couldn't get away with the shit they're talking about now.
No.
You'd be off air.
I know.
Ofcom would march you out the door quicker than you could say, well, some of the things they used to say.
It's the sign of the snowflakery age in which we live, Ben.
I'd say it's more than just snowflakery. It's just not acceptable.
And I think because XFM were sort of fairly new then, I think they would push the boundaries a little bit more, whereas now they've become, you know, as happens with a lot of places, they become more establishment and therefore have to become more rule-abiding. They're not quite prepared to take the risks they once were.
I know, they don't even exist anymore. It's Radio X now, isn't it?
I know, and it's all owned by a big corporate conglomerate.
Yeah, and their idea of humour now is Chris Moyles.
Well, he's popular.
Apparently.
I mean, not my cup of tea, but, you know.
With some people. I like Johnny Vaughan, though.
I mean, we're not a lot of people's cup of tea. You know?
Oh, I know. But,
you can't legislate for taste.
I'll tell you what, though. I'll take Chris Moyles any day over Steve Allen on LBC. Not that he's there anymore. But, no. Yeah. I don't hate him like I hate Steve Allen.
No, that's a different level, that, isn't it? You know.
We're getting very showbiz now, aren't we? It sounded like a couple of gossipy old bitches.
We sound like a bitter old Queens. We sound like the Steve Allen show. That's what we've turned into.
I'm not sure we can say bitter old Queens. We're going to get cancelled.
I think you can say bitter old Queen. You can be bitter and an old queen. And Steve Allen ticks all of those boxes. I'm sure you're allowed to say that.
Well, you've said it about three times now, so in for a penny and for a pound.
Well, let's see. I mean, sometimes I pray for being cancelled. It would at least prove a listenership.
Well, yeah, because then, you know, we might start going viral for the appalling things we've said on our podcast, and people will think, well, what appalling things?
Yeah.
They'll download the show and listen.
I mean, maybe one week we'll just put in something absolutely, like, really beyond the pale. Just throw it in. Like,
what do you want to go? Racist, sexist? What do you want to do?
Well, we'll try and tick as many boxes. Like, we'll just come at one phrase that will tick all the. We'll get Diane Abbott to write it.
Satire.
Satire there, ladies and gentlemen. But obviously it wouldn't be her final draft. We would have got the wrong letter. But yeah, we just get a phrase and throw it in and see what. I mean, I wouldn't risk it. If I'm honest with you, I wouldn't risk it.
I'd probably be safe. Probably better to have no listeners than listeners for all the wrong reasons.
I have a line in my head, and sometimes that line is maybe further on than some people's lines, but it's still not. I think my line is still fairly safe. And I think calling Steve Allen a bitter old queen is absolutely fine.
What are we supposed to be talking about here?
Oh, I was going to mention the alarm, the warning system. Did you get it?
Was it about our language on the podcast? Yes, I did get the emergency alarm.
Mine was early.
I got it exactly 3 o'clock, as did Mrs. Ben. She got hers too.
2:59 mine came through. I thought, that's not good. You know, what kind of organisation has set this up? I'm one of these people where if you say 3 o'clock, you mean 3 o'clock. Not 2:59 or some people got it 3:01, I was reading. I mean, come on, people, get it sorted.
Well, I was told, or I wasn't told personally, the government didn't consult me on this, but I heard that they sort of said it's going to be around 3 o'clock, so not everyone will get it at the same time.
Okay, fair enough. I'll let them off the hook then.
Did make me wonder, though, how many relationships has this ended?
Well, what you mean, people? Because, I mean, obviously there was a legitimate concern from domestic violence charities about people who are in dangerous situations. But what you are talking about are people having affairs and secret phones, aren't you?
Exactly, because fortunately,
nobody brought that up, did they, as a legitimate concern?
Well, no. I mean, the domestic violence one is a lot more of a genuine problem. But I was thinking, fortunately, hand on my heart, I'm not having a secret affair behind Mrs. Ben's back.
Well, you seemed a bit too concerned about the whole thing, really, Ben.
No, honestly.
It's almost like you... probably hidden it away and worked out how to turn it off in time.
I've buried it in the garden. No, seriously though, there must have been some idiots who are, you know, they've got a burner phone in the cupboard that the wife doesn't know about, and they use it to, you know, meet their floozy on the side.
Yeah.
And that phone has pinged and the alarm system's gone off, and the woman's thought, what's that noise? And then she's discovered the secret phone. It kind of got me thinking, like, I wonder how many other inventions have had accidental, fatal results. Like, there must be a number. I mean, we'll never know it, but there must be a number of people who have accidentally killed themselves trying to take an Instagram selfie to show off.
Well, I think that's... Yeah, I mean, it has happened, hasn't it? People have been on sort of cliff edges and stuff, and it's not gone well.
There must be a sort of body count that the iPhone alone is responsible for.
Well, I don't know if we can lawfully say that, Ben.
No, I mean, it's just a matter of, I mean, any invention.
I think let's not say the iPhone. Let's call it the smartphone.
The mobile phone.
Yeah, let's not apportion any blame to a massive company very rich. I mean, you're worried about me calling Steve Allen a bitter old queen, and yet there you are going, well, the iPhone is obviously responsible for many deaths. No. I mean, it's clearly responsible of that massive organisation with huge expensive lawyers to be putting out a device that kills people.
I should clarify, I'm not singling out Apple. I meant in general. Well, I just thought because the Apple is so brilliantly successful, and theirs is obviously the best bit of kit, that I thought everyone has an iPhone. What I meant, of course, was the mobile phone. I'm panicking now. But since the invention of the mobile phone, people must have been not concentrating, looking at their phone, walking into the road, got hit by a car.
Do you remember when, like, that Pokemon Go was the big thing? I mean, people...
That'll have killed people.
People were walking out in the road because they were searching for Pokemons. I mean
if you were the maker of Pokemon Go...
This is the sort of world we've created.
Okay, let's not libel Pokemon as well. Let's just say someone has listened to our podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have been so shocked by the libelous drivel that we're spouting.
Steve Allen fan.
Both of them.
They walked out into the road.
Yeah, and they weren't looking at what they were doing. And our podcast, something we've put out, which is supposed to bring pleasure to the masses, has caused someone to be so shocked, they've been distracted, and boom, they're now dead. I mean, if we could take out a few Steve Allen fans, then I'm not too fussed.
I mean, if... I'd like to think if someone has met their demise listening to the podcast, it was more because they were laughing so much they lost control of the car, or they just lost control of where they were, walked out in front of a bus.
But would you not feel at all bad that something you've created has caused an accidental death?
Yeah. Oh, well, let's not think about that.
I mean, then, of course, if you're selling the podcast, which we're not, the podcast is free. Amazingly, we don't charge for this. But if you build a mobile game...
How would we never have the audacity to charge for this?
If you sold a mobile game or something like that and someone was playing your game, which they paid for, then they'd had some terrible accident because they were distracted, would you think, well, that's their own fault? Or would you think, I don't care, I made some money. You know, if you're going to make an omelette, you're going to break some eggs. Or, you know, would you think I can countenance that in my head, that's okay, it's not my fault, I still have the right to sell my games? Or would you feel terribly guilty that the thing you put out into the world had resulted in death?
Well, I'd feel terrible that it had happened, but I would think that the person has to take some responsibility for their actions. So although I'd feel bad about it, I don't know whether it would stop me continuing to provide whatever product I was providing.
I suppose it kind of comes down to a certain point, you've got to sort of chalk it up as, well, that's unfortunate, but it really isn't my fault. Like, if you were a Premier League game and somebody booted the ball into the crowd and it knocked over some old deer and that did him in,
yeah.
I mean, that would the player would probably feel terrible, but again, wouldn't really be culpable, would they?
No. So it's very similar to that. Basically, what we're saying is we absolve ourselves of any responsibility if, during this podcast, you meet your end.
So if you're going to be having a secret affair, you need to be more switched on.
Right, there was a headline about it. I mean, obviously, I knew it was going to happen on the phone. I was almost quite excited by it. Like, there was a sense of anticipation. I had my phone in my hand. I was waiting for it. It was quite an exciting thing, I felt.
May I kind of took the piss out of me for that, because he was saying, oh, what are you up to this afternoon? And I said to him, well, I'm quite looking forward to this emergency broadcasting. That's going to be quite exciting.
Yeah.
What do you mean exciting?
I agree. I think there was a level of excitement about it.
I mean, technically, I can see his point. We were basically told, hey, everyone, at 3 o'clock, your phone's going to make a noise. And at 3 o'clock, our phones made a noise. Yeah. And you and I went, everyone else sort of went, so what?
Well, what I'm saying, I didn't put other things on hold for it. It just so happened at 3 o'clock, I was doing fuck all. I thought, well, I'll wait for it. But there was a thing in the press about people at Wembley, because they moved it, didn't they? They moved it to 3 o'clock, so it didn't obstruct the London Marathon in any way in the morning, or the FA Cup semi-final in the afternoon. So they thought 3 o'clock's a good time to have it, so that it's not in the middle of those huge sporting events, right? And I read that people who were at Wembley at 3 o'clock, the headline said something like, people scared by it. And I thought, you must have known, like, there's been enough publicity about this thing. How could you have been scared by it? And it had test in massive letters on the text of the thing.
Yeah, and if you bothered to read it, it clearly stated, this is just a test, don't panic, you're fine.
Yeah, so I don't understand how people could have been scared by it. I mean, I tell you what would scare you. In Florida last week, people were woken up by their emergency alert system at 4:45 in the morning.
I heard about this.
And it came up saying test, so at least you'd know straight away it's a test. But I reckon if you're woken up at that time in the morning by your emergency alarm, that would shit you up.
Well, yes, it would. But like you say, at least that one said it was a test. I'm sure there was one in Hawaii not so long ago.
A couple of years ago, yeah.
Where it didn't say it was a test. It announced impending nuclear doom and shit people right up. Thankfully, it was just a mistake. I don't really mind if ours didn't work perfectly the first time around, because that was the point of it. It was a test.
Yes, yes.
But if you were to get, you know, impending nuclear doom, then that would put the willies up you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I know some phones didn't get it, and that was the idea of the test. Obviously, they need to work out why some phones didn't get it, because in the case of a real emergency, they need to make sure everyone does get a thing. But, I mean, my problem with it is you just know how incompetent we are as a nation. So you know at some point we will get a message warning us of some impending doom and it'll be bullshit. And then it's going to be that thing about the boy who cried wolf, isn't it? Once you've had that, like if you lived in Hawaii, for example, and you've had that once, you say, oh shit, missile incoming. Oh no, it's a mistake. Like the next time you get one saying missile incoming, we just go, oh fuck it. Nah.
Do you think you would though? Because that's a hell of an arrogant gamble to take.
Yeah. How many mistakes would it need for you to become blasé?
Well, the boy who cried wolf,
Three times, wasn't it?
He did it more than once. So yeah. I think if they make one mistake...
I mean, I think... But by the way, can I just say, I think the townspeople were fucking stupid falling for it as many times as they did.
Well, you're the boy who cried wolf, yeah. Not the native people of Hawaii.
No, I mean, really, the second time we did it, they would have gone... If that was me, I'd have gone, fuck off, mate. We've done this once before. I'm not falling for it again.
I think with an impending nuclear blast, with a warning from the government, I would give them the benefit of the doubt a few times, assuming that the government weren't winding me up.
My question is, how long will it be until on one of these prankster TV shows that's done to someone, that they send the alert to someone's phone, and for our entertainment we'll see someone absolutely shit themselves?
I imagine that's probably gonna happen. I feel like we're slightly past the days of shock game shows like Distraction with Jimmy Carr, but yeah, I could totally see that 20 years ago as a sort of shock round on a shit ITV Channel 4.
Beadle's about, you know, Jeremy Beadle typing a message to someone saying, you're going to die in 10 minutes. And then him turning up with a false beard. Never needed a false beard. He had a beard.
He had a beard.
I don't know why he always put a false beard on. That didn't disguise him particularly well. I could never understand why people couldn't see it was Jeremy Beadle.
He was quite distinctive, wasn't he?
Yeah. Great show, though. I mean, when I was a kid, it was a great show Beadle's about.
Yeah. I mean, some of the pranks, they weren't very high tech, and I was always amazed how stupid some people were to fall for it. But I'm sure he did one with like an alien invasion. And it was
he did.
Blow up like an inflatable grey alien doll he held up.
Yeah.
And it looks so fake. I don't know how anyone fell for that.
But they built it like, they kind of made a massive crater in their front garden or in a field or something.
I reckon since the invention of things like YouTube and social media and TikTok and all that sort of crap these days, I reckon it's much harder to fool people than it was in the days of Beatles About. I wonder how many of our listeners even remember Beatles
yeah,
About.
I know.
The faintest idea what we're talking about.
I mean, luckily our listenership are quite old. Ben, I know you're a fan of the snooker.
I am a fan. I haven't been watching it much recently, but I am a big fan, yeah.
Right, and we were just talking about people doing things, pranks, stunts for the sake of entertainment. Well, obviously, they can be used to get an important message across.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Well, it was at the World Championship Snooker Tournament that's taking place at the world-famous Crucible Theatre in Sheffield, of course.
Yeah.
This week, where was it Just Stop Oil, I think, is the name of the campaign. Just Stop Oil campaigner rushed out the crowd. Two of them, in fact, because there were two tables playing, you know, next to each other. On one side, the referee managed to stop the woman from progressing onto the table.
But yeah, the referee side, on table two, he was very switched on. He wrestled her to the ground straight away.
But on the other one, the guy jumped up onto the table and threw some orange powder, paint powder, I think it was, up in the air and threw that onto the table.
I was very disappointed that the referee wasn't quick enough to go foul.
Well, the thing about it is, right, I'm not sure, on a serious level, I'm not sure how effective this sort of stunt is. I mean, they say it's to get the issue being talked about, and you could argue that we are now talking about it. But I think what happens is you talk about the event itself, the stunt itself, and not actually the problem that they're trying to put into the public eye. In this case, let's stop using oil. Something I could probably get behind that. But I don't really see that jumping on a snooker table and throwing paint about really is that effective, because that's what we're talking about. We're not actually talking about the issue.
Two things are true at the same time. One is we wouldn't be talking about Just Stop Oil and their cause if this hadn't happened. If they'd done a peaceful protest, we'd have ignored it. We'd have never even heard about it. We wouldn't be talking about it. So on that grounds, it's a successful way of getting some attention. On the other hand, the other thing that's true at the same time is I don't choose to support them. I think he's a massive bell end. He's ruined an expensive day out for a lot of people who that might have been the treat they've saved up for a long time, and some fucking twat has jumped onto the table and ruined it for so many people.
The thing I loved about it more than, because who cares? I mean, it's...
I do! You're just trying to wind me up now. You don't mean that.
I mean, I love...
Well, I tell you what, mate, you wait till some fucking pillock charges at the dartboard, and then you'll cry, won't you?
Oh, mate, I mean, it'd be awful. It'd be a terrible thing to happen, that, wouldn't it? I loved the reaction of the snooker crowd, because the snooker crowd, you almost kind of think of as a very, because they have to sit there in silence. I mean, I heard the referee tell someone off the other day because their mobile went off. I mean, it wasn't the alert. It was just someone and she was a bit terse about it as well, the referee. She went, "Can you turn that off, please?"
Was it the lovely Michaela, the referee?
Well, I don't know her name. I didn't watch long enough to find out her name. I mean, Christ, I was bored since this. But that was the most exciting bit.
Oh no, it's very bad snooker etiquette to leave your phone on. That's terrible.
But so you think of the snooker crowd as sort of quiet, refined even.
We are refined. Right. We're not the drunken thugs that go to watch the darts.
I'm going to play you the crowd's reaction when the man jumped on the table. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. Just have a listen to the abuse that comes very quickly from the snooker crowd. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's just brilliant. So immediately someone's going, you fucking prick. Knock him out. Loads of people are like, knock him out.
Well, it is brave to approach, you know, two men at a table with clubs, essentially, big old sticks that they can smack him around
there.
I tell you what that is, though. That's years of pent-up, repressed rage. I mean...
Well, because they've had to watch snooker for so fucking long. So angry.
That's them having to sit there, you know, respectfully with the referee saying... Thank you. That'll do. Thank you. Settle down. Thank you. That's enough. Thank you. So the one opportunity after all these years, they finally get to unleash hell. They're going to take it.
I mean, the last bit is still my favourite.
Knock him up, yeah.
Arsehole. It reminded me, I couldn't get this out of my head when I heard it. It reminded me of a little bit from an episode of Father Ted where it's the sheep... competition, and it's been fixed, and Father Ted goes to reveal who's fixed the sheep competition, and it just reminded me of that.
The real villain in this piece has yet to be revealed. Fargo Boyle!
What?
Fucking hell.
And what I loved even more was the BBC commentator and their reaction to what was going on.
Terrible scenes here at the Crucible.
These are terrible scenes at the Crucible. I was half expecting to go, oh, the humanity. It's a man with some paint.
Like, yeah, made it wasn't exactly like- the Hindenburg, was it?
No. But I mean, it makes me think of like other times with snooker. Do you remember the streaker at the snooker?
I don't think I've seen that. I can only imagine because, you know, call me a sexist if you want. Streakers are rarely, I mean, I know it has happened, but they're rarely beautiful women, are they?
Well, I think it might have been a woman.
Really?
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was a fat, ugly man. Oh, no, there was a woman one. And I think that caused a right old kerfuffle. I mean, can you imagine that sort of thing happening at the snooker?
I mean, what did he do once he ran on naked? Did he try and take a shot?
I don't think he was in any position to take any shots. He wasn't in cue mode.
Good. So he wasn't bending over the table. So we weren't confronted by a difficult brown.
No, just an embarrassing pink.
Trip, I feel I should apologise because I think I've been a bit macabre throughout this podcast.
You have been quite macabre, actually, yeah.
And I'm not going to change.
You're right.
I'm fine. But I just wanted to know, it's been quite a sad couple of weeks. We've had the old celebrities die in three rule come into play and we had a few passings recently, which has been sad.
I mean, just today we've had Len Goodman.
Len Goodman today and recently Paul O'Grady and Barry Humphries.
Can I just say, I've never really watched Strictly Come Dancing, but wasn't Len Goodman famous for saying a number in a certain way?
Seven, I believe.
So I'm hoping that somewhere he's gone to heaven!
Hey! Let's hope so, eh? Bless him. But one of the weirder things I spotted was The Guardian ran an obituary to Barry Humphries, which was very sweet and full of, you know, his life's achievements and his memories and things.
By the way, can I just say, I think it was The Express on their webpage on the day Barry Humphries died, put a picture up of someone else dressed as Dame Edna.
Fantastic.
Beveridge. I mean, that's the sort of level of journalism we're talking about.
Well, I mean, that's just incompetent. But this one was very odd. The Guardian ran the obituary of Barry Humphries, and people noticed it was written by a gentleman called Peter Coleman. Now, I don't expect you to know that name, because I didn't. And it turns out he was an Australian politician and writer of sorts. Basically, there's this very heartfelt obituary written, and Peter Coleman died in 2019. So I read this, and I thought, what in the time traveller is this? How have you written an obituary to someone who died in 2023 and you died in 2019? And it seems to turn out that a lot of these big news companies have got all of these obituaries just sort of ready to go.
Oh, I see, right.
And this poor bloke, he wrote this obituary, well, at least 4 years ago, and then he's since passed, and then nobody's bothered to update this obituary. Well, they've obviously updated it with the sort of ending facts and dates, but yeah, it's sort of like this obituary has come from beyond the grave. It's very unusual.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Like, when you work, I mean, you can assume that media organisations do have obituaries for certain people ready to go. You know, I'm sure the BBC, because they turn out very quickly like an already set piece when someone dies, you know. So I reckon they do have quite a stock ready to go when people reach a certain age.
Another thing, the Daily Mail, who I'm sure you don't like, they came up with an article which they published on the day of his death. The headline, it's quite a lengthy headline, The Dark Side of the Dame. For anyone who doesn't know Barry Humphries, he played a character called Dame Edna Everidge. The Dark Side of the Dame. Four marriages, sex and alcohol addiction, and a checkered relationship with his children. How troubled genius Barry Humphries laid the blame for it all firmly on his mother. It's not very pithy as a headline.
No.
But is that the most appropriate story to publish on the day he dies?
It's the Mail, mate. I mean,
this seems kind of shit. Scummy, doesn't it?
But it is a scummy rag.
It got me looking as well at some other celebrity obituary gaffes that have taken place over the years.
Right.
Did you know that Neil Young had an obituary published?
Neil Young, is he actually dead?
No, he's very much still alive to this day.
I mean, why did they publish an obituary? What happened that caused that to occur?
Well, I think he's currently 77 years old.
Right.
But back in 2012, NBC reported that the astronaut, Neil Young, had passed away at the age of 82.
Right. Okay.
Lots of questions that need answering here.
I mean, everyone knows it's Neil Armstrong. I mean, everyone knows that.
I know. You just wonder. This is the thing. I've said this before on this podcast. I always assume someone's in charge. Clearly nobody. Did nobody think to proofread that Neil Young was the first man on the moon?
And also, like, even if you got the name wrong, I mean, did they start writing about the records he's released over his career as a pop music artist? Because wouldn't that have raised some alarm bells? Well, I mean, it's not really mentioning taking the first human steps on the moon. It's really talking about his 1984 solo album success, his seminal album.
And it's not the only example. Barbara Bush, when she passed away, before she passed away, they were close. They were a lot closer than Neil Young, who's still with us. A few days before she passed away, CBS released her obituary with the headline, word for word, I'll read this to you. Do not publish. Former First Lady Barbara Bush dies at age 92. Do not publish. And they published it.
For a second mention, was Diane Abbott in charge?
I mean, just terrible. And this one I found fascinating was Alfred Nobel.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you can't get that wrong, surely.
Creator of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
But what happened was, it's very sad, his brother passed away and an obituary was published confusing his brother for him. And before he had done the whole Nobel Peace Prize stuff, he was famous as the inventor of dynamite, which was basically used in war to essentially kill as many people as quickly as possible.
Yes.
So when the newspapers confused his brother's passing with him, he got the chance to read his own obituary, and he was referred to as the Merchant of Death. And he was so appalled that the idea that his legacy would be that he was some death monger, that he then went on to leave a lot of his money to the Nobel Prize and the Nobel Peace Prize and all this sort of stuff. And he completely changed his life and founded the whole Nobel Peace thing, which is quite a fascinating turnaround, all because he didn't want to be remembered as the Merchant of Death. But But I mean, it is a rare chance to be given to sort of see what your legacy will be and then get the chance to change it. That's quite amazing. You don't often get that, but I think I could live with it. I mean, I'd like to think people wouldn't think after I've died that, oh, he was a bit of a dick. But if they do, I can't really change it. But, you know, bit of a dick, it's not the worst thing I'll ever be called. That's okay. But Merchant of Death, I mean, yeah. Jesus, no wonder he wanted to change that.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a moniker to have over your name for the rest of eternity, if that was the case, wouldn't it?
I mean, there is a part of me that thinks it is quite cool, though, isn't it? The Merchant of Death. It's quite a cool nickname. I bet if you could, you know, get some action if you were to go out to the ladies and say, yeah, they call me the Merchant of Death.
You think you'd get some action by being the Merchant of Death?
There are people who marry men on death row. They've got to be queuing up for the Merchant of Death,
the
haven't
Merchant
they?
Of Death. I suppose. I mean, there will be a portion of society that will be attracted to somebody called the Merchant of Death. I frankly wouldn't want anything to do with those people.
By the way, you take what you can get.
By the way, I should mention before I'm accused of getting someone's legacy incorrect, I should probably mention that Neil Young's seminal albums were more in the 60s and the 70s rather than 1984. Now, before we wrap up this week, Ben, I think it's time for episode 3 and potentially the final episode for now. I mean, I don't know how popular this has been. We did get a little bit of feedback from last week's episode.
Oh, did we?
When you played Woman.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you can recreate the voice that you adapted for that role.
I think I can try.
Yeah, well, John said, basically, that's, have you been working as a phone sex worker, sort of moonlighting in the evenings? I mean,
well,
I'm assuming
everyone's
John's
a fucking
that.
Critic, well, aren't John's they? You were scathing as well.
John's obviously heard that voice before, which makes me think the two of you have somehow connected beyond the normal ways of communication through this podcast.
Sorry, John.
Yeah. I mean, are you costing John £1.95 a minute? That's what I want to find out.
Right. But on the other hand, the podcast is still free.
Podcast is still free, yeah. So, this is episode 3 of Secrets and Betrayals. Again, I've not looked at the script. I'm going to open it right now.
No, I don't know if you'd call it the beauty of it, but one of the things we like to do is generate this via the AI and then cold read it. So, yeah. We honestly haven't read this in advance.
No idea what's going to happen. So, I'm going to open the script now. Now, again, what we'll do is I will obviously play Trev. I'll play Trev's sister, whose name I can't remember.
I think it's Sarah.
Sarah, that's it. I'll play Sarah.
Are you not paying attention to this plot?
Well, there's a lot going on, Ben. I can't keep up with everything. Right, so I'm opening the script.
We should remind people the name of the show is Secrets and Betrayals.
Secrets and Betrayals, episode 3.
The scene opens with Sarah, Trev and Ben in Sarah's mansion, discussing the recent events of the past few weeks.
Sorry to stop straight away, but maybe we should just recap that last week Sarah ended up getting a mansion very quickly from the proceeds of her parents' untimely demise.
Yes, it flew through the probate process extremely fast.
Yeah, yeah, and they're my parents as well. Sarah's my sister. Okay, right.
Yes, well, no questions asked about why you didn't receive any of this massive inheritance.
Maybe it will be revealed in this episode. Right, here we go. Sorry. I still can't believe it. We went from mourning our parents to being millionaires to now having to worry about our safety.
It's you again.
Oh, yes. Well, sorry, I'm just thrown by that.
We used to get paid for this.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying, I'm just thrown by Sarah's first line. Because, yes, she went from mourning the parents to being a millionaire very quickly. She moved on from mourning pretty quickly. But I don't remember what the worried about the safety was. Was there a shadowy figure appear? Was that the end of episode 1?
Oh, that rings a bell.
Yeah, we should have thought this through a little bit more.
Oh, here we go. As they continue to talk, the camera pans to the outside of the mansion. A shadowy figure is seen watching them from a distance.
Right, okay.
Right. We should probably try and do a brief episode recap every week, because if we can't remember, how is anyone else?
Right, okay. I still can't believe it. We went from mourning our parents to being millionaires, turning to Mickey Mouse, to now having to worry about our safety. Yeah, and now we have to deal with the new threat of someone trying to take advantage of Sarah's wealth.
Don't worry, I've hired the best security team in town. They're keeping an eye on everything.
I still don't understand why you're around all the time. I don't know what I'd do without you, Ben. So, what's next?
We need to find out who's behind all this. Who is trying to take advantage of Sarah's inheritance? And why?
Do you think it could be one of my parents' enemies?
It's possible. Your parents were very successful in the real estate business. They made a lot of enemies along the way.
I just can't believe someone would be so evil as to try and hurt us like this. We have to be prepared for anything. We can't let our guard down.
Suddenly, the front door opens and a figure steps inside. The three of them immediately jump to their feet, ready to defend themselves.
And who are you? How did you get in here? Now, who's playing figure? This character is just called Figure.
Well, you're already doing Sarah and Trev.
I'll be interested to see what voice you're giving Figure. Let's see if John phones this one.
It's me, Sarah. It's your brother, Michael.
Hang on, that means it's my brother. What? Michael is dead. He died years ago.
I faked my death. I had to disappear for a while. But I'm back now.
I mean, you've gone to, like, EastEnders acting, page one.
Wouldn't this be your brother as well?
I know, that's what I'm saying. This is insane. How could you do this to us? Who's Michael? Hang on, who's Michael?
Michael was Figure a minute ago.
Yeah, oh, right. All right, okay.
He's introduced himself now.
Oh, are you? Oh, that's right, yeah.
Pay attention.
Right. I had no choice. I was being threatened. I had to go underground to protect myself.
But why didn't you tell us? We thought you were dead.
I couldn't risk it. But now, I need your help. I need to clear my name.
What do you mean?
I've been accused of embezzlement. I'm being framed. I need your help to prove me innocence.
This is crazy. We can't just trust you like that. But he's our brother. We have to give him a chance.
Meanwhile, in a different location, a woman is seen walking down a dark alley. She looks scared and confused. Suddenly, she sees a man waiting for her at the end of the alley.
Right, now we've got man and Samantha. Now, is this the same man as in episode one, or is this another man?
That's a very good point. If it's this, didn't man originally have an Australian accent? And I think he was voiced by me, but we don't know if it's the same man.
No, we don't.
We don't want to muddy the... I mean, if it is the same man, I'd like to... You know, for continuity, I'd like to get his accent right. But if it's a different man, I don't want to muddy the waters by confusing things.
I don't think continuity is a problem on this site. So, you do man...
Hello, Samantha. I've been waiting for you.
Right. Where are you from?
Somewhere near Ken Bruce, I think. Okay. I'm going to run out of accents soon. And there's only so many appropriate ones I can do. Right.
Do it again. See if it changes.
Hello, Samantha. I've been waiting for you.
It is Ken Bruce. Right. Who are you? How do you know my name?
I know a lot of things about you, Samantha. Like the fact you have a daughter.
This is like a BBC radio party. It's Ken Bruce and Pam Ayres. What? How do you know that?
I'm your husband, the one you thought was dead.
There's no more line. That's it.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Samantha looks shocked and overwhelmed as the camera fades to black, leaving the audience with a cliffhanger.
Now, I think that AI has been quite lazy there. It's just introduced two completely brand new characters and thrown in a plot twist of two people we barely care about. It can't end like that.
I don't know. This is, there's more going on to this.
The I know, and I seem to be clinging on to you like some sort of pest. Like,
well, I mean, I think you're after something. I mean,
well, the inheritance.
Because, I mean, our relationship still hasn't really been explained from episode... Because episode one, you would have thought that we were, you know, maybe best buddies or more.
I think there was a heavy implication of more, to be honest.
So we're a couple.
It seemed that way.
But, you know, to me, it just seems like you're there to... I don't trust you anymore, really. That's the...
It seems like you're too polite to ask me to go home at this point.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I am intrigued as to who Samantha and Man are, why we've been subtly introduced to them, why she didn't know it was her husband is a quite a key question.
I mean, I don't know what to do next, whether we go again next week or whether we give it a rest.
I don't know, but if at some point we do choose to conclude this, I'm going to have to ask the AI to write a fairly lengthy script, which... sort of joins all the dots, connects all these bizarre, unrelated storylines, and comes up with some kind of conclusion.
Yeah.
But for now, until otherwise, what do we do? Do we leave it here for a while?
I think we'll see how the week goes and see whether we get any response. Just let us know. I mean, the one conclusion I have come to from doing this experiment,
yes,
is I don't think we have anything to fear from AI.
Do you think there's any future sort of lucrative voiceover work for us in murder mysteries?
No. No. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. As always, before we wrap up, some recommendations. I've got two for you this week, Ben.
Okay, what have you got?
First of all, a more serious drama.
Ooh.
It was on ITV over three nights, The Hunt for Raoul Moat.
Oh, wow, I remember that very vividly.
2010 that occurred, which surprised me. In my mind, it wasn't that long ago. There's an accompanying documentary as well, which follows that on ITV. I mean, it's a fascinating but grim story, really, isn't it?
Do you remember where you were at the time when he was finally apprehended?
I do. I was watching it at home. I remember watching the continuous coverage because it became so compelling, especially when like Gaza turned up.
I was gonna say that was the most left sort of field thing of the. I mean, it sounds like something somewhere. It sounds like something the AI would have made up.
Yes,
and then Gaza turned up with a fishing rod and a chicken.
Yeah, what, man. What? Man turns up. Yeah, I mean, just mad. They don't really have. I mean, I was waiting for the actor to play Gaza to come on, but they just covered it with a little comment, and that was it. I suppose it would take away from the serious nature of the programme. But
it was so strange. Oh God! But quite a serious crime, the whole thing.
Yeah,
I was at a Premier Inn in Brighton when he was finally stopped.
Wow, it's a good drama, so that's well worth a watch. And the other thing I'm going to recommend is called Rain Dogs. It's on the BBC. It's a comedy drama. It stars Daisy May Cooper, who I just think is one of the best actresses at the moment. I've not seen anything she's in that is bad.
Oh, she's great.
So a couple of really good little cameos in there. Well, not really cameos. Aid Edmondson plays a brilliant character in it. And Carl Pilkington pops up in a couple of episodes.
Wow.
Which is extraordinary. He's not in it for long, but he's not a bad actor, really, is he? I mean, he just plays...
I think he's surprisingly good, actually.
He sort of just plays himself in many ways. But yeah, it's called Rain Dogs on the BBC. Well worth a watch.
Absolutely brilliant. I will definitely do that because Mrs. Ben is a big fan of Daisy May Cooper, and I'm a big fan of Carl Pilkington and Adrian Edmondson. So there you go. You recommended me last night to watch the latest Derren Brown TV special called Showman.
Yes, which I haven't yet watched. I've recorded it, haven't got around to seeing it yet.
I won't spoil anything, of course, because we don't like to do that with the recommendations, but it's an absolutely belting show. I mean, it's exactly what you'd expect from Derren Brown. It's amazing. It'll probably be on four on... What do they call it now? Is it All Four or Four on Demand? Or
I don't know what it's Four Play.
All Four or something. Yeah, whatever the fucking Channel 4 thing is this week, that's the one. Search Channel 4, catch up, Derren Brown, Showman. It's incredible.
Right, I look forward to that. I may go and watch it straight after this. So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Do get in touch with us. I mean, honestly, do let us know if you want us to carry on with the soap or not, because we genuinely don't know whether it's shit or not.
It's a bit like, to be honest, if I make something for dinner,
And
it's something I have not made before.
Yeah.
And I put it in front of Mrs. Ben, and if she says, oh, that's really nice, I say, are you sure?
Yeah.
Because if you tell me it's nice, I will make it again.
Yeah, yeah.
So just be honest here, because... but the problem is, radio silence, we don't know what to do with.
Exactly, yeah. The chances are we'll just keep doing it. So do let us know. We're at Trevor Mill on Twitter, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.